Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work Plus on, well, for us, it's been a bit since we've continued our X-Men rewatch. It hasn't been for the folks out there listening. But before I jump into the movie that we're going to watch today, first, welcome to the Sanctum for the first time.
Oh my gosh, I am so honored to be here. I don't know if I feel like a celebrity guest on like Jimmy Kimmel's show or if I feel like Joker on that horrible show that he's about to murder someone in, but either way, I love it. Are you taking a picture of me right now?
No, I've got to get a pic so that people can see the, you are in like, it's a pretty comfy chair. That's my reading chair.
All right. What a house. First of all, love the house.
Wow.
Strongly approve. Secondly, love what you've done to the place. This has really developed into something here. I'm looking at this dope TV that looks like a painting. You've put some sound paneling up here that listeners can see on video on our main feed, but there's also some behind you now.
Yeah.
Nice little desk setup, nice mic setup. And then the highlight so far, the Civil War poster, and right below it, the John Pazino vinyl theme, the Spider-Man yeah. 2 theme playing as I get set up in here. Look, tough to beat.
I mean, this is what happens when you come into town and record in person. We can do this every time.
We need to do a lot more often for certain. We've now done this for Spider-Man No Way Home. We did this together for Black Panther Wakanda Forever, for Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
Black Widow was the first one ever.
Black Widow was a special thing for us. That was our first like screener and in-person recording. That was special. Mm-hmm.
And then Shang-Chi we did.
Yes, here in Austin. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Eternals was separate. I saw that in Nashville.
Yep.
Are we missing something?
Multiverse of Madness
was here. Because remember, then, we recorded the video of me collapsing to the floor
yeah.
after I realized what Wanda had done.
Love and Thunder was L.A.
L.A.? World premiere.
Yeah. And Quantumania.
Dude, how special. The two L.A. ones were really special.
Yeah, those were so fun. I'm so curious how, like, how much that influenced the way that I view both of those movies still, because I view them both very positively.
For which sure.
Those are both pretty polarizing.
For movies. Sure. I think it had an impact, but I'm happy to be here. This is my first time in this room. I don't know if it'll have the same impact for X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I mean,
no offense to space. I don't know if it can compete with the memory you have of LA. But no, this is so, so cool for me.
It does make me think, as we're talking about a movie featuring Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds, the last time this has happened until July, we should think about maybe doing Deadpool.
Absolutely. Live. Well, because also that will be unique because I know nothing about it. So that's a good one to kind of be yeah. guided through. Plus, my wife is not going to be into it. So you would be
yeah,
my better
that's a
guide.
Good. Is she going to watch the,
I don't know,
the movies with you on the rewatch here?
I think so, but I don't know. Man. I would love that. That's my dream world. My dream world is that it takes off to a point where we can do something special for all of these. Because mm-hmm. I really have a good time when we do it. Hey, it's going to be in Austin. I didn't bring you $100,000 candy bar. I'm just remembering right
wow.
now. And Pete even reminded me today to stop at the store and get one, and I didn't. I guess Deadpool is our next shot at that.
Wow. Well, maybe we can go to a theater that has them. Does that happen? The theaters
probably
sell them?
Oh, probably. Yeah, that would be awesome. Also, totally off subject, but we were playing the Spider-Man 2 Greater Together score on vinyl, which is really cool that you have that. And that got me thinking that I have recently been listening to the Journey Through the MCU playlist, and I have two other bonus episodes are brewing. One, I want to do another music-focused episode at some point. I don't know if I'm going to do like Kyle's list of my top 10 tracks on the playlist and you react to that, or if it's a, like we talked about on social media, like the best music for a character, which is probably Thor, and then like maybe the top five there or something. Just a music episode I'm starting in my notes here. And then I told you this before, I also started a list of just what I call the best movies I've ever seen. And I have a list of about 25 movies that I could think of that I just would classify as like their own tier.
I like for that. Me. I like that.
So maybe run some of those by you too.
Did I formally update the Journey Through the MCU playlist?
I think so. It was pretty current when I listened yesterday on the way over here.
Okay. I thought that I did, but then I was thinking the other day, actually, I'm going to check while I'm right here.
I need to get through some of the newer stuff later and then give you some edits.
It is. Yeah. It's always like, you know, you have to trim down, but
there's a track called Glorious Purpose by Natalie Holt in Loki season 2. It is the music that they're playing at the very, very end when everything's calmed down and like Mobius reflecting on if he wants to do this anymore and what else does he have in store for his life if not this. It's this actual beautiful heavy moment, kind of. It's one of my favorite moments in that season because it feels like the Office finale, kind of, where you've been through so much of these characters and yes, you've won. It kind of feels like Interstellar, you've won, and so you're really excited about, you made a huge difference, but now what? Like, what is my purpose?
Right.
And as Mobius is wrestling with that, and there's this cool shot of him staring at the sunlight and his face is like overly bright, overexposed. And it's just, he's like kind of squinting and they're playing this. And on that track, if you listen, it's just gorgeous. It takes the main theme. Natalie takes the main theme, the ba-na-na-na, and kind of makes it major. And slow, boom, boom,
boom, yeah, boom, 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 boom. And then
there's a trumpet solo. It like finally swells into this big thing, and there's a trumpet that goes like, in the back. It gives me chills every time. Holy crap,
dude!
That would be a contender now for a top 10 track for me on that.
Which, man, I've listened so much as I was putting the playlist together. I listened to those scores a lot, and specifically the tail end of Volume 2, because all those like really emotional tracks are so great that I just keep thinking about her saying that we should have her on again to talk specifically about episode 5 and 6. And I'm like, yeah, that feels warranted, because those are like, those are all the tracks that had not come out yet when we talked with her.
Good point.
Before, and they're the ones that I like gravitate towards now.
Okay, let's get on topic here. X-Men Origins Wolverine, the fourth movie in our X-Men Foxverse rewatch slash watch. Look, I know what everyone's thinking. Some of the memes on our Discord have made me laugh out loud. Specifically, you posted that we're going to be watching this film this week, and someone posted that meme of the guy going like, There's been some really funny talk. But Friends from Work was founded on the principle of finding some joy and some beauty in things that not everyone sees joy and beauty in. So
yeah.
I'm going to put you on the spot. I'll put myself in the spot because I haven't looked at these notes in a while. Before we dive into all the goofy things that are so fun to make fun of, you must tell me two things that are good about this movie, and I'll tell you two things that are good about the film. That's how we're kicking off today's episode. X-Men Origins Wolverine. When did it release?
2009.
He's going to fact check that. You need to tell me two positive things before we start.
Easy.
Okay. Was it 2009?
It was 2009.
Okay. You love to see it.
First, leave Schreiber.
Oh.
I'm a fan.
Okay.
I like seeing him things, and I feel like he does a great job in this. All like the character design is goofy, and the things that they make him say are goofy, but I think that given the role that was handed to him, I think he does a great job.
I posted an Ask Us Anything on Instagram, and when you walked in the room and you didn't hear me, that's what one of the questions was. Honest opinion on Liev Schreiber. And I said, well, I don't want to spoil it, but I don't think he's that bad. That's what I said. That was my answer on Instagram.
I didn't know that.
So
that's
people
what that
can
was.
Verify that.
So I actually...
You thought it was about the movie in general.
Yeah, which, I mean, I'll get to that in a second. But I did, Candace has been reminding me to say this whenever we watch this movie. On our last trip to New York, I talked about the John Williams show that we went to, but I don't think that I talked about... We went to a Broadway, it was a version of Doubt, which I think began as a novel and was adapted into a play and was then adapted into a movie. But it's a movie that a lot of folks will know, stars Philip Seymour Hoffman and Meryl Streep. Anyway, Liev Schreiber was playing the Philip Seymour Hoffman role. And it was just this,
oh, really?
You know, like the fun thing about going to see, yeah, like those Broadway plays like that are, I mean, I guess really any of those theaters are small by comparison, but especially the kind of anything where there isn't like the musical element, I feel like everything gets shrunken down a little bit more still. So you're so close to these people, and he was so fun to watch. He was really, really good. He like put his own spin on it, but Candace and I were talking about how impressed we were with his performance in particular. And then we got back and I realized the next movie for me to watch was X-Men Origins. And I was like, if you thought that was something,
just wait,
you just wait.
To toot my own horn for a second, I believe, and listeners can fact check me, that a couple of weeks ago, a few episodes ago, I said that. I think I said, oh, Liev Schreiber's a big step up. Well, I think it was during the first
X-Men
one.
Yeah.
Where I was like, sense. But he's better. And you were kind of like,
Yeah, no,
but
fair.
I think he is better.
He is, yeah.
It's not saying much. The first Sabretooth character in that first X-Men's a little tough at times.
So yeah, now that's two things that I have to circle back to. But we were saying two nice things first. I said one, so I'm going to kick it back to you, and then we can alternate.
Yeah, okay. This is not too difficult for me. I like the old family that Logan stumbles upon in the farmhouse.
Yeah.
And I like that Logan gets a little bit of an Uncle Ben moment there. Now, I have a few caveats to it.
Right.
But it works okay.
That is a great call out, because I feel like most of that, you know, most of Jackman's stuff in general, we can talk about this, works well, but I feel like the emotional scenes whenever he's, even the stuff with him at the beginning with Kayla, is that her name?
Don't ask me. I thought it was Michelle Monaghan for a second.
No, well, Silver Fox, I guess, yeah, is yeah, like okay, the, but it's just... We'll get into that anyway, but even those scenes, like from his perspective, work. And so because I feel like those actors that are playing the couple are also doing a pretty good job, those are scenes that kind of stand out.
Is yeah, that that's your a good call. Is that your second thing? Or do you have another second thing?
No, I have a second thing.
Okay.
But I like that because that wasn't going to be one of mine. Okay, and good. So often we overlap.
What's your second thing?
My second thing is actually the... parts of the intro, like the very, very beginning, a lot of it's really bad, but I do specifically, like even rewatching it, I think it's imagined in a fun way. The kind of montage of him and Victor fighting in all these different wars
okay.
to kind of show time progressing. Now, again, it's really over the top. I don't even think that it can be called campy because it doesn't know what it's doing.
Sure.
But it is like it tells you something about them, and it sets up, like, those are those moments when I'm like, okay, if you were to slice out chunks of this and just make them like flashbacks or something to show like these past lives of Logan that we don't get any more of a glimpse into than we do in like a montage like that, that's cool. It's just... obviously everything that kind of surrounds them. I do have to note that I was watching like the scene where he stabs his real dad, Victor's dad. And the young Logan is Troye Sivan, who is now known as like a pop sensation. But
oh, that's weird.
At the time was just playing young Wolverine randomly. I do think he's Australian. And I wonder if that factored into them playing like a young Australian actor.
That's probably the tie-in. My second positive thing to kick off the episode, I do feel like you get some classic Wolverine moments. There's some one-liners and a lot of him flexing his muscles and stabbing people with his claws. And some of them are pretty cool.
We do have
when he goes, "Do you even know how to kill me?" And it's cheesy and on the nose, but he goes, "I'm going to cut your damn head off. We'll try that and see if that works." I kind of like that as Wolverine. Jackman still feels like Wolverine here. And so you get some classic moments.
And we get a classic cool guy walks away from an explosion.
Oh, I don't know if that's a positive. It is one of the most prototypical cool guy walks away from explosions that you can possibly think of. Okay.
It's like, I actually think that does feature in the, and was that like a Lonely Island song?
Now that you've brought it up, we just have to start here. The claws in the bathroom sequence. Keep in mind, I've never seen this before. Imagine my horror when I got to that scene.
Oh man, yours especially. Like it's noteworthy for me, and that says something because I don't ever catch these things.
It's the worst thing I maybe have ever seen. You know how we use hyperbole a lot and to be funny. I'm not kidding. I wonder if you and I could have done a better job. It literally looks like Microsoft Paint.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. How is that possible? And then there are a couple of sequences in this movie that look so bad. Tonight you and I were watching the end of this movie again, and I pointed out the scene where the young mutants are running away and they're running towards Charles's helicopter in the woods. And it literally looks like they're running into a painting.
Uh-huh.
It is jaw-droppingly bad. And you said this movie released in 2009, so I just don't have a lot of grace for it anymore when Iron Man exists, Batman Begins exists.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. Actually, even in the genre, X1 exists. X2 exists.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And those look really good.
Yeah, true. All the Raimi Spider-Mans exist at this point.
The Dark Knight maybe even exists at this point.
Yeah.
Right? 2008?
For sure.
Anyways, the claws. Tell me that's a known thing, right?
It is. Yeah. I mean, I feel like at the time it was. And I know that it is because I remember when this came out, it was such a thing. And I was really hoping that there was going to be some way for them to go back and like,
yeah, like retouch it up
for like the Blu-ray release or DVD or whatever it was at the time. And so I like watched it so hopeful. And then obviously they didn't.
Not even being funny. It is hard for me to wrap my mind around somebody okaying / green lighting that and going, "We're okay with this releasing."
Right.
it's unbelievable.
It is really wild, you're right, to position that in time with the birth of the MCU and the kind of heyday of the Nolan Batmans, because man, like that is one thing you can say for at least like X3 and Spider-Man 3 is they weren't being like, they didn't have any real competition in that way. Like at least Spider-Man 3, it's not like it had to, it wasn't like the Amazing Spider-Man 2, right? That we talked about coming out in like 2014 with Guardians and Winter Soldier, where it's like, that's a rough hand. Like Spider-Man 3 and X3 just got to be bad, like all on their own. But this is like, if you're going to put out a bad superhero movie a year after Iron Man and the Dark Knight, and it's this bad, like, man, there's so much to talk about there, though, because I was reading the reviews around this movie as I was getting ready.
Oh.
And it's just always fascinating to me to see how, like, not the current reviews, but, like, the reviews at the time. And this movie did not get crushed the way that you would expect. I mean, like, it did not get good reviews, but like, there were a lot of blurbs that were very like, you know, it's kind of like your average superhero movie. Like, you know, what do you expect? People talking about superhero fatigue in 2009, and people saying that, like, again, just versions of, like, yeah, this is your kind of like run of the mill thing. Like, yeah, it's not gonna like move any needles, but it got a B+ cinema score rating, which is crazy. So my point being, like,
that's
we've talked
higher
about
than Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, right?
Yeah, we've talked about the needle moving and just like
the goalpost moving.
Yes, yeah, sorry, the opposite of the needle moving, I guess. It's like, this is such an example of movies coming out this year and last year that if they had come out like during this time would have been like masterpieces, right?
Sure.
But it's like, because if you dropped this now, it would be like, it wouldn't be Madam Web level, because Hugh Jackman is still like, still has kind of a star power that would elevate it, but it would be like kind of close.
One notch above. One notch better than that guy, Toby. That's the obvious thing. All right, I don't know how you want to do this.
Well, the other thing I wanted to talk about before I forget, because you brought up the clause, I wanted to follow up on what we talked about from the first X-Men in our first rewatch episode, where like that's another, like, it's a very timely thing as to like what was going on in 2009, but also looking at it like within the evolution of the superhero movie. In the first X-Men film, we talked about how Hugh Jackman accidentally cut one of the stunt women that was playing Mystique because they were doing the fight sequences with actual like blades on his gloves,
which is how you have to do it, unfortunately. And although you could still do it with like plastic blades if you want to.
It'd seem like there's a middle ground.
Yeah.
But like, they're like,
don't
either
actually sharpen them
totally sharp blades that could in fact kill a person,
to where a Stryker can type in decapitate
or
execute
Microsoft Paint. Those are
there's got to be a middle ground there.
Isn't that fascinating, though, that like we talked specifically about how good those looked, or just how good a lot of things looked in those first two X-Men movies.
You know, there's a couple things. Remember, Sabretooth jumping away looks kind of goofy, and some of the Storm levitating, some of that doesn't age perfectly, but it still has a different kind of like campy, almost heartwarming kind of goofy look, because they still kind of did it practically. Like when Storm rolls in, they clearly are just flashing some lights and blowing wind around to where her hair is going crazy and stuff. You know, someone's off camera, like throwing books, you know, that kind of thing. But it still kind of has like a fun charm. True. The Microsoft Paint thing is like, the only explanation I can think of is that this was the era of where we started transitioning to, oh, we can just do that in post.
Right.
That's where we now have the capability. Just wait till you see what we can now do with technology.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure people still feel today about our current technology. But like, once you see what I can do, and they kind of like let it fly, they don't do the prosthetics, and then that's what they could pull off.
Yeah,
But again, the Iron Man 1 suit up scene is all CGI'd. And yes, it looks a little bit CGI'd for sure. But it's not Microsoft Paint.
Right.
So there's still a way to pull it off even in that era for sure.
I do think it's...
How about the fight against Deadpool? That is clearly just a normal fight but sped up like 150%. And then the camera cuts like with the background where they're clearly not on top of a nuclear reactor. So the CGI background sped up 150%. I mean, it's just... it's bad visual effects decision after bad visual effects decision. It's distractingly bad. So it's hard to talk about some of the other aspects with how bad it is.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me curious to look at how even the Wolverine movies progress from here. Like, obviously this is not a concern that we flagged in Days of Future Past. And I think we would have if there were any issues there. So, and I don't know that it was an X3. If there was any other movie where it would have been, it will be that one.
We're going to X3 next, right?
Right. So we'll see. And these are the two that are closest together in terms of release date. But I wonder, like, specifically with the James Mangold ones, like, does he surely, like, with a movie like Logan, you have to go for something that's a little bit more practical, but I don't know. Like, I wonder what the lessons were.
I saw Logan not too long ago. It still holds up. Okay. Shifting gears a little bit.
Yeah.
My second note is, oh my gosh, Wade Wilson is in this movie. I know nothing about this character.
So you didn't know that?
No.
Wow. Okay.
And I guess I don't even know if I want you to answer this. I'm staring at you right now. I'm looking at him right in the eyes. His fat, sweaty face staring at me like a dying fish. That's a Will Ferrell SNL. Best of Will Ferrell SNL. Between you and me, I'd like to stomp on his head till my foot's covered in brains. And then he hangs up the phone. Oh, hi. How are you doing? Like, I can hear you. Anyways, you know what I'm talking about at all? The Best of Will Ferrell.
I used to watch that
DVD.
There were two volumes, right?
Yes, I have them. I own them. Anyways, that's what he says. He's staring at me right now. He's on the phone. Okay, anyways, I'm looking at you right now. Don't maybe react to this, but I don't even know how much any of this ties into Deadpool, the movie. Is this supposed to be the same Deadpool? Does he start with a mouth covered like this? Is he created to be a mutant killer? Does he have single blades and other powers besides that? I truly know that little. I guess don't answer that. But
so
I guess I was surprised to see him is my point.
I feel like I will wind up answering that when we talk about the timeline stuff.
Okay, then just tell me.
So,
but don't ruin tons, but.
No. But I think it's a good place to talk about. I mean, we've said over and over again that the X-Men timeline stuff is so, like, from the very beginning, they just didn't seem to care about consistency. And to their credit, it's not like they were thinking of, like, living in a post-MCU world where we were going to look at these things in this level of detail. But the only way that I think you can make sense of the timeline here, and I can say this to you without being a spoiler because you've seen Days of Future Past. I think we have to look at basically everything that happens pre-1970s, which is when Logan travels back to in Days of Future Past. That is all canon regardless, right? So anything that we've seen from like First Class is supposed to at this point be canon.
Okay, I have questions, but keep going for a second.
And I think the things that you saw in this movie,
because this is post 1970, right? This is like Chernobyl. Yes. So it's like 1979.
So I think that technically, although I'm sure they will never really get into this, I think technically you can make the argument that everything that happens, like in the montage, for instance, is also canon insofar as it's kind of like pre-70s. But I think technically the bulk of this happens in the 80s, like once you're into the main narrative and all of that. Basically like everything after the Vietnam stuff, I think, would be stricken from the record, including any Wade Wilson appearance.
Because that's post... Oh, that's what you're getting at.
Right.
Because it's post-1970s, this is not the same Deadpool.
Right.
But clearly, when they were making this movie, they were trying to reference the Deadpool from comics, the same Deadpool that then the Deadpool movies are referencing.
Right.
It's just not the same. It's a reboot of the character.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah.
But then why is the next Deadpool movie called Deadpool and Wolverine? If like they clearly they have history, that's why the movie's them together. Are they banking it off just this film as their history?
I think that they're hoping that for the most part, people don't even know that this happened, and they're making this like a Deadpool's a huge star and Wolverine's a huge star,
and we're going to combine them in the MCU.
But I do think that there's no way the movie doesn't reference Origins because it's a Deadpool movie, and the existing Deadpool movies are like filled with meta comments like that.
The post-credits scene where Deadpool grabs his own head and now his mouth's open. He says, shh, is there any deeper meaning to that? Like in the moment, what were fans supposed to think there? Oh my gosh, he can talk. Oh my gosh, he's alive.
I think, oh my gosh, he's alive. Like, because in again, I mean, it's just, it's interesting how all this stuff plays out. Like, this was 2009. The first Deadpool was 2015, which is like not actually that far apart for how different the eras were. And I think that during a lot of that time, Ryan Reynolds was actively trying to get a Deadpool movie made. There were a lot of stories about how hard he personally fought for it. And I think that's why he's so like associated with that character beyond just the fact that he plays him. Like, he's written those movies and I think is a producer on all of them and really helped like get them made. My point being, I think that there was maybe a point where they thought he would be picking up from this and then moving on and doing whatever. And this would kind of be like a Deadpool origin. And then maybe he would show up in a modern X-Men movie as well. But
that's like with so many things in the X-Men universe, gets scrapped or gets restarted or rebooted. Yeah. And then it ends up not making sense, or none of it does. So what we've seen so far, even though First Class was technically originally meant to be a rebooted franchise, then, like you told me, kind of halfway through or whatever, they shifted their mindset to, oh no, this could be earlier versions of the characters.
Right.
So in timeline order, because that's the one thing that gets a little bit confusing in the watch order we're doing, because yes, we are keeping narrative themes together by going back. But if you've never seen them, it's a little bit confusing actual just chronologically.
Yeah.
So First Class is the 60s. Mm-hmm. And in that movie, Wolverine, because he doesn't age, is very similar age, and they only get one cameo there. He's not really a factor. But obviously, Charles and Eric are younger.
Right.
Okay.
And based on the Days of Future Past, we know that Logan was around at that time and didn't have the metal claws yet.
So then that fast forwards about 20 years, you're saying, to about 1982, to this movie, where now Wolverine does a lot of things we've seen referenced, like Stryker, although it's a different Stryker, it's supposed to be the same person. It's a younger Brian Cox.
Right.
Even though it doesn't make any sense. It's a recasted role, but it's still the same younger Stryker.
Yeah.
He's doing his experiments. He does all his experiments on Wolverine, and then we'll get to this in a second. But then because of the bullet, Wolverine loses his memories.
Right.
And so that's how he can then go to X1, where he doesn't really know a lot of stuff about him, and then continue that to X2 where he still doesn't know a lot, but he gets flashes. And so he should be seeing scenes from this movie, but he's not. But something similar to this movie.
Right.
That's all tracking, right?
Yeah. No, I think that that's right.
And that's where we leave him here.
And
he's about to walk to X1.
Yeah. And basically,
but just tell me, when we watch the next Wolverine movie, is that pre X1 then in this gap or later?
Later for
after X1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part. So the reason I've divided it up this way is in large part, I think it makes it clear there's like a dividing line. Like, even though we jump back in time with First Class, because I feel like the world building is so much better in the first X-Men movie, I do think that at least until we get to Days of Future Past, it is clear that all of this is in like one original timeline. Then there's the moment in Days of Future Past where it basically gets like reset, and everything after that is in a new timeline. So it is at least divided that way.
I wasn't trying to challenge you, by the way, on your watch order. Huh?
No. But I think that I've gotten questions, and it's that part of the reason why I think it's helpful to watch First Class here is because if you do watch it later, like after Origins, then it gets even more confusing what's going on, because you jump away from like the main cast entirely. You're not totally clear how or if they fully relate to the main cast. And then to have a movie like this, I think you would end just like as scrambled as the series could leave you. Or vice versa, if you did like this and then went to First Class, which
you're
is
you're scrambled regardless.
Yeah, but my hope is that this way, it's like you're invested in two movies. You get like background into Eric and Charles, then you get background into Wolverine, and then now we're back to kind of the conclusion of the trilogy in the next movie. that's where we will be at the end of this episode, but we've still got a lot to talk about.
Yeah. So this has become the educational portion of this podcast episode. Really quickly, since we have so much pitch. One of my notes was, what's the history of adamantium versus vibranium?
Did they
intentionally try to just make two metals that are super strong and indestructible, or was it meant to be a replacement for the other?
I actually need to do more research into that.
Okay.
Because I'm curious. Now, knowing timeline-wise, it almost has to be that vibranium existed first, because pretty far back they make Cap's shield out of vibranium, but certainly whenever they introduce Black Panther in Fantastic Four, and then Wolverine is not introduced for another 15 years after that. So I think that, like, it is strange to me if that's the case, that they wouldn't have just made his claws out of vibranium. But it's now it's a thing where I wonder even if, like, an MCU adaptation, if they were to make that change, if it would upset people, because it's like they have to be adamantium claws. But really, it is weird that you have to have two indestructible metals in the same universe.
Okay. Rapid fire here on some of these, and then we can talk about whatever you want to talk about this movie. I did appreciate, as I mentioned earlier, some of the campy lines. Some of them worked for me in a funny way. Like, I wrote this one down. Haven't had to kill anyone in a while. Starting to miss it. And then Wolverine saying, I am now. Like, I kind of like some of the cheese there. I told you about that. I'll cut your head off and we'll see if that works.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Well, oh, man. And sorry, talking about the writing here, I do have to flag, this is written by one of the, like, Game of Thrones star, like, showrunner creator guys. David Benioff is known as, like, it's Benioff and Wise or the Game of Thrones guys.
Does that say more about Game of Thrones or Wolverine?
That's the question. I mean, they famously, as soon as they got off script in the shows, which everyone's heard, the show's writing went way downhill.
Okay. I'll just say this then. This is hot take. Number whatever, three.
Uh-huh.
I don't think the writing's bad here. I think of all the aspects of the movie making, clearly the visual is like a disaster, garbage.
Yeah.
Some of the acting is garbage. Some of the, like, pacing and, like, the timeline stuff is garbage. But I would say the writing is probably one of the better features of the movie.
Like the dialogue.
The actual dialogue.
Because the story is terrible.
Because, like, you were laughing tonight with even some of the lines from Gambit and stuff. But I actually thought that some of them were written pretty well for what they're having to say.
Yeah. No, I think the problem with a problem with a lot of the writing for me is how rushed it is, because they're mashing scenes together. Like, the pacing is so weird that it makes the dialogue hard. But I feel like they have some bad actors, but they have some good actors, like Dominique Monaghan, who I know mostly as Mary and you know mostly as Charlie.
100%.
Like, he's great, I think. I mean, it's a weird character that he has to play, but it's like, you know, he's just kind of doing something reasonably well. And
I said I love the old family. I did. It's a little bit, this is not the term, but you call it fridging, right? That's not exactly what this is. But little bit like, I get annoyed by, let me introduce the sweetest people possible, just to then brutally murder them for no reason. They're not even involved in this at all, then motivate Logan to, now it's not a romantic thing, but to then motivate Logan to be pissed off and keep running. That kind of stuff gets on my nerves.
Yeah.
So I liked the sweetness they displayed, and I like him having that moment with the jacket and the motorcycle.
Uh-huh.
But then I was like, come on, we have to shoot him in the head then too? Like,
yeah. Okay, there are two things there.
Is that the accurate use of fridging besides?
Yeah.
Besides the romantic.
Yeah, I think
part
it's normally like
romantic.
Right, but I think that otherwise that it, like, the characters just exist to motivate him to take vengeance.
Sure.
But we were talking to Pete in our group chat, and he was listening to the First Class episode and talking about how he had also flagged certain things that felt so forced when it came to connecting the dots. And I think I've referenced, like, the Solo movie as being another example of that. We've always talked about Rogue One as being, like, the ideal version of that.
I just rewatched Rogue One. It's so good, dude. Holy cow.
I have been listening to that score a lot. I've been wanting to rewatch Rogue One since watching
Michael Giacchino.
Yeah, so great. It's like the combo of him and John Williams, him using John Williams.
Still my favorite Star Wars project ever. Keep going.
Man, fair. But I think this, like the jacket thing, is an example of that. Like I'm like,
it's like a detail we just didn't need to know about.
Like I don't need to know that he's been wearing the same jacket for 20 years. Like also,
you know what the perfect example of this is? Jacket, I think, is Black Widow.
Oh yeah.
Do you agree or disagree? Like I like that. That's a subtle way to be making jokes about it, and then by the end of the movie, you're like, oh, I get why Nat would wear that.
And because to me, like I don't think. Like, that's one where it is, it's done subtly enough to where you don't realize what they're doing until you're already kind of buying it.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas here, it's just like...
because it's Yelena's first, and you don't think, like, oh, that's Natasha's jacket. You don't think that ever.
It's like, and actually, I don't think I even realized it until either someone pointed it out or, like, I saw saw Infinity War referenced. But, yeah, here it's like, even the moment when he's like... oh man, it's like a perfect fit. It's just,
you don't like it.
It's so like, I don't like, but there are all these moments. Actually, this whole movie suffers from that in that, like, I think looking at the things that I don't like about First Class and the things that some of the things that I don't like here, I find that it's every time the movie feels like it needs to explain everything, like, make every connection and fill in every gap, even when there are things that just don't need to be filled in at all. Like, for example, all of X2, we're getting this great background into what happened with the Weapon X program. We even get the scenes. We get the scenes where he's all, like, covered in blood and screaming, and, like, you understand that that was the moment when he would have lost his memory.
But then
for them to go back and not only like
the bullet,
not only the bullet, but even like the actual procedure, like instead of him coming out all like bloody and screaming, he comes out like perfectly, like he's out of the water in like a slow motion, like
that
action
shot,
star.
The famous shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Where it's like, man, it's those movies were only made again. I mean, I guess like 6 years apart looking at the changes on either side, but like one, why did we need to get 6 years later, the same scene redone over again? And then if you're going to do it,
at best, it's confusing.
Right. Because there are just clear differences. Also like in those flashbacks, I want to say you see, maybe you don't see a young Brian Cox in those flashbacks. But regardless, it is like that's another weird thing is that they, like at least in Days of Future Past, you may not remember this, but you get a young William Stryker.
Yes.
And he's like, he looks like
he could be.
Yeah. Like the guy that was in his like 50s or 60s in the 2000s would have been in his like 30s or 20s in the 70s and then like 30s or like early 40s in like Origins. But, like, that does not look like a, I guess maybe it's like a 2009
it
version
all
of being
just,
in your 40s.
It all just adds to the confusion for sure. The bullet really quickly.
Yeah.
The bullet is almost, the bullet is almost on par with the claws in that if you just step back for a second, remove yourself from this movie, if you're the writer, why? Why did that have to be explained more? And what bullet does that?
So
a bullet that won't kill him, but it will take out his memories.
Right.
And he knows that's what's going to happen. So there's never been a person like Wolverine.
But
they make these adamantium bullets to take him out.
Right.
But then he just knows and explains it to us, the audience, not what he's thinking. Like, worst case scenario, just have him be thinking that, like, maybe if I shoot him, we'll see what happens. Maybe I'll kill him. And then maybe Logan wakes up and goes, oh, I can't remember anything. Okay.
Right.
Then at least we have to be told. But for him to actually say, well, this isn't going to kill him, but it's going to knock his memories out, is like so heavy handed. I just don't understand who can make that call and sleep at night.
it's so strange because it made sense before. Like, all of it made sense. Like, we find out that he was a part of some kind of, like, military experiment. We find out that he volunteered, or at least that's what Stryker says, but we don't really know why or, like, in what capacity. And then we know that he doesn't remember anything before that, or, like, that event itself. And all of that kind of tells you, like, okay, like, we get why he has the dog tags. We get why he's a loner and roaming. And we get that, like, whatever happened to him to put all the metal in his body is also probably the thing that, like, threw his body into shock and made him, like, reset. Like, all of that is kind of, like, they never have to say any of it, so it doesn't get, like, it doesn't get cheesy in the same way. We can just glean all of it. But then to say, yeah, we have this specific weapon that if we hit him with it will make him lose his memories. It's just crazy plot device.
It's unbelievable.
Okay,
listen to this. Here's my rapid fire questions as I'm kind of closing. These are my final notes. And this is legit. This is from my first time watching.
Uh-huh.
And this will just kind of sum up the whole back half of the movie now. Okay, I can sum this up. The walk-away explosion with the metal guitar. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Metal guitar, full-blown, horrible-looking CGI explosion in the background.
Which is, that's the Agent Zero death, right?
I don't remember, actually.
When he, like, flicks the
that's exactly what it is. Sorry, yes.
I have to say, because we were just talking about the adamantium bullet, and I don't think we want to have to come back and talk about that again.
Well, I was going to bring it back.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, then, I want to see what you're going to say, because it might be the note that I have.
No, nothing more. Just, I wanted you to get the ridiculousness of my notes here. The boxing sequence against Fred is so stupid.
Oh, man.
So, like, trying to insert comic relief, it's so stupid.
Also, the forced, you would appreciate this, I thought, because of what we were talking about with Kirk, but the like, hey, bub, did you call me Blob? Like, is the most forced interaction.
Oh, no, it's
talking
so
about the writing.
Oh, so bad. Deadpool is the mutant killer. Logan's girlfriend is alive and she's in on it. Is this supposed to be the same Deadpool? Why does Victor turn so easily? Why are they fighting on a reactor? Why is he typing decapitate? Why does it look so bad? Why does the adamantium bullet cause only memory loss? How is Charles walking?
Oh, right. Yeah. Also that. Which was such
timeline, right? Because first class,
yeah.
It's a choice we figure out. No, right. Sorry. Days of Future Past, we figure out that he has to choose between the two. Why is now the adult version, let's say the 50-year-old version of Charles or whatever, mm-hmm. able to just walk? It's clearly the bald-headed Charles.
Right.
If he's using his powers, which we found out that he can't do both.
Well, and... yeah, I mean, the answer to that is just that they hadn't...
Yeah, I know. Like, but that's the kind of stuff that's like...
Well, and because...
It's so confusing for people unless you're so right. in the weeds to know that.
And you'll notice, like The Last Stand, also because it was kind of existing in the same timeline here, even pre-First Class, before they edited it the first time, he also... can walk in a flashback that would have taken place way after. So, like, the benefit is if we did watch these in release order, by the time you get to First Class, you've forgotten about these little glitches. But even then, if you get there and you remember about the times when you, like, the moment when you see Professor X in Origins, it's not like it takes it away. They just, it's so weird. But I think Days of Future Past is maybe supposed to give us, like, the out where, like, maybe he eventually finds, if you had to like no prize it, I think the answer is maybe Charles can eventually find a way to walk sometimes and like still maintain some control of his mental powers when he's going to like meet some of these mutants.
But then he's back in a wheelchair in X1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. And maybe it's like a
different degenerative disease that's unrelated.
Exactly. That, yeah. Easy.
Why give us such a moment in First Class where they're explaining why he's paralyzed?
Well, and they,
if you're going to then say right. like now it's actually just because of something else.
And they clearly.
Yeah, it is.
Had
that.
To
it's just a mix up.
They had to know that they had made a mistake though, at the end of First Class, because they immediately change him and Beast back when we see them next in Days of Future Past. And then, you know, like Beast will retransform and Charles will get back in a wheelchair. But it's like they knew that they had kind of jumped the gun on that, I think.
But how about those being my final notes? Like, legit, why are they fighting on a reactor? That's what I wrote.
Also,
and why the whole movie for an hour 50, Victor's his mortal enemy.
Right.
That's what they're setting up in the origin. And then just because Deadpool's around now, they're like, back to back.
Uh-huh.
And let's fight together. And then after that, he's like, this doesn't change anything. So I was just like, why is Victor saving him? Why didn't he kill Victor when he had the chance? And then why do they take it to the top of a nuclear reactor that looks just, it looks so sad, dude. It's horrifically bad. It makes me feel sick. I feel bad for them. And that's where they take it. And then the kicker is, which you and I commented on tonight, Deadpool actually can take written commands.
Oh, like, right, right.
Decapitate. Now, go. And then he would do it.
I want to know.
Unbelievable.
I want to know the extent of that technology. Like,
how far will it go?
Get
me a burger.
Like,
I'll take a beer.
It's so weird. Could he not give him orders in like an earpiece that he would be obligated to follow? It has to be like, but yeah, I mean, which again, I'm like, what computing systems did you have in the 80s that allowed for like total mind control via like keyboard?
He also assimilated all the powers too. So,
well, yeah,
because pretty powerful supercomputer.
They had to add him to the pool, the Deadpool, which is another actual line from that movie.
Wait, are you being serious?
Yeah, did you catch that?
No.
Whenever he's like, when Logan gets to the base at the end and sees Stryker, he's like, before I do it, I want to know why. And they're like, before I gut you, I want to know why. It's all just, the exchange is incredible. And then Stryker says, like, I had to have your sample to add it to the pool. And then Logan's like, the pool? And he's like, yeah, the Deadpool. The mutant killing machine that I've built or whatever. And then, so I mean,
okay, I take back some of the compliments I gave the writing.
I mean, those are the ones though, where I'm like, I don't know what direction he was given as a script writer, how much of the story credit he's supposed to have had, but those are the, like, there are other things that I don't know that we can blame him for that feel on par with that, where I'm like, well, maybe this is a story or like design cue, because like the Deadpool costume, you would not recognize as much, but has those kind of like diamond, like they're the like white eyes, but then inside there's like a diamond shape.
A black kind of outline, right?
Yeah. And I noticed for the first time tonight that they do that with his eyes whenever he like does the Cyclops blast, which
yes.
I had never really put together before, I guess. But it's like they're trying to do all these little like aha, like look, see. But it's such from this this era where like it's like it was the worst of all
don't
worlds.
You see, we know the comic books too.
No, it's exactly that. Like, it's like they want to like throw these bones to like hardcore comics fans, but they're too afraid to go like where we would see them get with like Ragnarok. When we talk about like the Hela design and Mysterio, like this was still that era of like, we have to try to make things like not comic booky, but instead they just make them like from a bad comic book. Like there's no reason why they wouldn't, like there's nothing about Deadpool's costume that to me seems inherently
like that you couldn't just do it literally.
Right. Which I mean, and like that's the thing, and I'm grateful for it, I guess, because I think Ryan Reynolds wanted to push back so much in the opposite direction that he does go for like the actual suit and is in it basically like the entire movie and just like leans into everything that this portrayal isn't. So in that sense, it's like,
I'm really intrigued to get to Deadpool and find out why he looks the way he does. I don't know anything about that, and I'm sure our listeners are like, oh, gosh, whatever. But I am curious about that, because even in this movie, he's got, like, the weird eyes and, like,
oh, yeah,
like a scarred head kind of thing.
You'll get it.
I'll give you the last 5 minutes to kind of say whatever you want that's left and close it out. I'll wrap my portion by saying this is a bad movie. This is a bad movie.
Yeah.
Right now, I think if I had to rank them, I would go X2, clearly tier one, a decent gap. And then I go X1. I think on First Class, I interchange those. So I'd go X2, a gap, X1, and then First Class are pretty interchangeable, like really close to me.
Yeah.
Then this is a massive, massive, massive gap. And then X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Right.
This is a bad movie. So just to get on my soapbox for 1 second, this is why I sometimes a little bit roll my eyes at people who complain about Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. Because like we talked about at the beginning of the episode, I do think the goalpost has moved. If this was ever acceptable, now it has 38% Rotten Tomatoes, so it's not acceptable.
Right.
As you said, this is closer to Madam Web than it is to Quantumania. So the fact that Quantumania has 45% critic and this is 38 is just a joke to me. In my opinion, we're not even discussing the same realm. This would be the worst MCU film. This is worse than The Incredible Hulk.
Oh,
and this is worse than Thor. So this this would be the its own tier. This would be tier five by itself. And I'm not even trying to be funny. Just this is a bad movie. And I've seen some bad DC movies as well. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the MCU has ever made a film this bad. So
I think that's
jokes aside,
true.
That's my takeaway.
Yeah. No, I think that's certainly true.
And I didn't say this a lot. I do think that Hugh Jackman himself, like I mentioned, is the lone. Not lone, but maybe lone saving grace. Like my two bosses were based on Hugh Jackman.
Right.
I still think that he's doing well. I liked a lot of his lines. I liked a lot of his physical moments. And I see him as Wolverine, even in a bad movie. I'm like, yeah, that's Wolverine.
Yeah.
And so it would be hard for me to see someone else Wolverine. And eventually I will have to see that. But that'd probably be my lone positive.
Yeah.
Is that I still think he is invested in this role, even when the movie's terrible.
And I will say, almost every review that I saw basically said some version of that. Everybody gave him kudos for treating this like it was not as bad of a movie as it was. Like he showed up to work every day as though he was making a movie that was good, despite the fact that it...
He probably had an inclination somewhere along the line.
Right. Oh,
this
yeah.
This is not working.
Man.
By the way, again, you finished the episode, but... I've thought about that before, how fascinating that would be.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, in the music world, the timelines are just shorter. So uh-huh. I think if you have a sense halfway through that this might not be good, you kind of just get it out and get it done with pretty quickly.
Mm.
I can't imagine what it'd be like to know that you are signed on to something where the whole world's going to see your work.
Right.
And it's a two-year thing, and you're 3 months in realizing, uh-oh. This is going to be terrible and it's going to be bad for my career.
Yeah. Cause I mean, it can like, man, it's just.
And what can you do at that moment then?
Yeah. That's one thing that I feel like I, obviously this was like a big part of the concern with the phase five stuff, at least in terms of the conversation, phase four and phase five. But I feel like Kevin Feige historically kind of got a name as being a person that was going to hold on to things until he was happy with them. And I do feel like that was part of Marvel's success, is that they were able to pace things kind of the opposite of some of the conversations that we've had around some of the post-Endgame things. But like in a situation like this, especially, if you're like the actor, it's not like you can stop the wheels. Like if it's like moving in a really terrible direction, you probably do just have to like,
you're stuck.
Yeah. Put your head in the sand, but it would also suck because like Hugh Jackman would have had to have done so much press for this movie.
Well, I haven't seen Madam Web yet, but I've obviously seen all the viral stuff about Dakota Johnson talking about stuff.
Oh, right.
And again, I'm not absolving her of any blame. Like she kind of wants you to believe.
Uh-huh.
But I would feel bad for her if that's the case. Like if she knew early on, like, oh, this is not what I thought I was signing up for. Like maybe she thought she was signing up for No Way Home for all she knows.
Yeah.
And then it was turning into the be that. And then you heard her push back on like all the PR stuff and Yeah, it would just be, it'd be a tough gig because then you get made fun of, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean.
Anyways, wrap this movie for us. Tell me anything else I missed and anything you want to say.
There are just a few things.
Another hour.
The comment that I was going to make earlier about the adamantium bullet. What's crazy to me is I think I got the exact line in quotes. If not, it's a close paraphrase. But if you remember, the first time they introduced the adamantium bullet is whenever he's escaped and they're like, oh, we got to get him back. Like he's, and I think that's when they have the conversation you were referring to. But what's crazy is they don't introduce that idea and tell anybody about the adamantium bullet until the agent has gone out and just like shot at him so many times and it just doesn't do anything. And then the guy's like, well, that's not going to work. You're going to have an adamantium bullet. And I'm like, okay, that feels like a thing that you might have told the guy who was about to go shoot him, who is also the one guy you know who is specifically very good at shooting things and always hitting the target. Maybe tell that guy about the adamantium bullet.
By the way, this isn't going to work.
Like, and then when you hit him, because you will, because that seems to be like your power, it will work. But instead they're like, ah, no, see, that's the thing. He doesn't have the adamantium bullet. And, you know, the thing that he wouldn't know about because we didn't say.
Do you think Wolverine can die? Like, if Wolverine gets brought into the MCU, can he die? And if so, have you thought about how you'd kill him?
I mean, he dies in Logan. Technically, I guess. I don't know what technically.
And that's because he's kind of losing his power, right?
Yeah, something to do with the...
I need to watch that.
There's like a, I think he's being like poisoned by the adamantium at that point, right? Like it's like, I thought that's how they do it. Like it's like the equivalent of lead poisoning or something.
I don't think it's that.
Is it not that?
I don't think it's that, but I need to look again. It doesn't matter. I thought like, you remember at the end of Days of Future Past where Magneto covers him in metal and then throws him at the bottom of the ocean. I thought about that before.
Like,
could you
right.
trap him and then put him underwater to where he eventually can't breathe? But I mean, even Deadpool can get his head cut off and come back to life apparently right. here. I don't love characters that I can't figure out how they would die.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair concern.
But I think he can. There's got to be some way.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's like, yeah, his healing power does have to be breaking down, which is what they tell us in Logan. Yeah. But... which I think is basically the only way he's ever, like, there was a whole death of Wolverine arc in the comics, and it's basically another version of that. Like, he loses his healing factor, and then, but
And maybe I missed this here. Is his healing factor just straight his mutant power?
Yeah.
So there's no other explanation of how he got that. It's just,
yeah, his mutant,
that's his power.
It's basically just, like, his mutant power is, kind of like.
So it's totally twofold. He has claws.
Yep.
And he heals.
Yeah. It's kind of a strange, like they have tried to package it as like, he's like the ultimate predator, you know? So it's like, he's physically like has these characteristics of like an animal, but is also able to heal. And so he's like unstoppable in that way. It's really like a kind of random power set. But interestingly, that was not, I think, the original imagining of the character. Like, whenever the character was first introduced, he's wearing the yellow costume. And if you look, even now, the costume has these, like, three metal outlets on the glove. And the artist that designed that thought that he would be wearing gloves that the claws came out of.
It's like the Spider-Man debate kind of thing.
Yes, yeah. And then... in fairness, this was like an early Chris Claremont edit, but they have an issue where they show him like they're out somewhere and the X-Men have to fight somebody and they're not in costume and the claws come out of his hands. And it's like this reveal, kind of a retcon, where they're like, no, he actually has them. And so from there on, they start to, and I don't know if the whole him originally having bone claws thing, I forget. That may not have come into play until Origins, the comic, which this was based off of. But anyway, it's kind of a interesting bit of Wolverine history. I think that that was everything for me, except one thing that I kept noting to bring up. I'm not even going to get into the Sabretooth stuff. But by the way,
we kind of got into Sabretooth.
No, I know. But I am going to ask this question because now I'm genuinely curious. There was not an answer on Wikipedia. Do we see what happens to Victor at the end of this movie?
No, he jumps off the nuclear core and then just leaves, I guess.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because I did note, I was thinking tonight when we were watching, I said it out loud, I don't know why they can just jump off and feel no damage. Like, he jumped off the core, even Wolverine.
Right.
I said he should have broken, mangled legs, and then those legs like could heal.
Right.
But no, Sabretooth just lands, and then I must just walk away.
Yeah, that's just...
So then let me think about that. So then, timeline-wise, when do we see him again?
I think that they're basically just... I don't even know if the movie's trying to make that the same character.
So next time we see him is X-1 with the huge beard and...
Because he would recognize Logan and say something. And also he...
Yeah, like that's the other thing. Like, wouldn't he be like, we were brothers?
Yeah. He looks so different and sounds so different and... I think they just wanted a second bite at the apple.
Yeah, do they ever even say Sabretooth? Do they say Sabretooth?
I feel like they make a point to say Victor almost.
Yeah, so maybe they don't even
clarify
that it is Sabretooth. We just all think that.
Right. Like it. I think it. There were probably like action figures and things that said Sabretooth, which is how this stuff normally gets official.
What did you think about all those other actors? Like, what do you think about Gambit?
I thought... This time I was watching it and I thought it was not as bad as I remembered. It's like, again, it's such a weird character and there are weird little glitches that just like, one, it's just so strange. He's introduced so late in the movie and then...
Saves the day.
It's the same thing you were just saying with Victor where it's like they have this fight. He keeps him from getting to Victor and then they're kind of just like, never mind. Like, we want the same thing. And then they're just kind of friends for the rest of the movie. But it's like, then you're supposed to get this kind of moment where he's like, hey, good luck out there. And it's like, this feels like a moment we would have with a character we met like 40 minutes ago, not like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But
I don't know that I buy much of the whole crew at the beginning either. Like, the fat wrestler guy, it just weirds me out that's a thing. And it makes the whole thing have this weird tone. Like goofy, creepy tone.
And Will I Am is in this movie.
Yeah.
Which is so weird. And he's like a Nightcrawler, except like worse.
The diet Nightcrawler.
Like he doesn't do any like cool flips or anything. He just like goes from place to place. And I think like has a gun. Which is effective, probably. Arguably more effective than Nightcrawler.
and then there's the Agent Zero guy we're talking about.
Yeah.
And then there's like, is he the sharpshooter?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a sharpshooter.
And then the electric guy.
And the electric, that's what I'm missing.
Man, but that's the other thing. Like, I'm talking about all these connecting points. It's like, at best, it's unnecessary. All the background stuff, and at worst, it's contradictory. Like, why does Stryker end this movie about to be like questioned for murder? Like, I understand why he's being questioned for murder, but how does that link up with like the version of him we get later? Like, when he's just supposed to be this guy that's been operating in like the military, like, he like gets questioned for murder and then just gets out of it. But like, what if that's the last time we're supposed to see that guy? That's like a really weird place to leave him.
Not only do I not know the answer to that question, it's one of those movies where the more you look into the loopholes, I think it gets worse.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It doesn't get better.
Right.
You could probably, if you were a diehard fan, there's even more things that I'm not bringing up that are probably like, why does that person do this? And
I thought about that because the same thing with all those early team members, it has the same feel of First Class, way, 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 way worse. Like, but the moments where it's like, we just want to show you a lot of mutants from the comics just to like check some boxes. And like, we know that you want to see Gambit. We know that you want to see like the Blob, like characters that were big, especially in the 90s show, which you're now getting acquainted with, that I am glad that you've seen 97 now, because you know what Gambit, kind of like prototypical Gambit.
You and I might watch episode 4. I'm dating this, but tomorrow.
True.
Together, maybe.
Okay, my actual last thought, though.
It feels a little bit like a Suicide Squad vibe, which is the other worst comic book movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The first one, the worst comic book movie I've ever seen. Although I've heard Elektra is worse, but.
Oh, man.
Anyways, that's kind of like the vibe they're trying to do that with that team up.
Yeah, but it's just so weird and bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt.
But
I'm exhausted. Also, I have to go to bed.
Also, I love that, like, the adamantium is just like a paperweight on the guy's desk. Like, that's how, like, specific. Like, how does Stryker know that that one guy has it as a paperweight?
And contrast that to the way vibranium is treated in the MCU. It's just kind of funny.
Right. The last note that I've been, like, teeing up forever is just that this movie was so bad, and I think it's one of, like, the rare times when this happens. The video game adaptation of it was actually excellent. Like, it was a really fun game.
I didn't even know it was a game.
I mean, it was early PS3. Like, I'm sure a lot of it wouldn't hold up, but this was back when they were, like, always unveiling these new technologies. Like, I remember they did something in one of the Star Wars games where you could, like, if you hit a box, it would break differently from different angles. And it was, like, the first time they were trying to introduce some real-world physics. Something they did with this game is, like, as he took damage, he actually, like, gets cut up and stuff. And then you can see him heal back. But the plot only, like, vaguely follows the movie. Mark Hamill does the voice of Wolverine.
What?
It's, like, weird. If you go look it up, it's, like, a generally well-regarded game. And it was, like, the only, like, Wolverine game we've really gotten in that way. So that's a big part of what makes me so excited for the new Insomniac game.
Because they're making that.
Well, and because the first Spider-Man was such a, like, they took the Spider-Man 2 video game, the original movie adaptation, which was another one of those, like, weirdly great movie-to-game adaptations, and then perfected it. And I'm hoping that they do that, but, like, even more so with the X-Men Origins Wolverine
video game. What a good point. That was going to be one of my other lists. I'm starting a list of my favorite / most influential video games of all time. So there you go.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Dude, I'm really tired. I flew to San Antonio, Texas this morning, had to do some work, and then I drove here. And so about time for me to wrap this bad boy. But yeah, this is a terrible movie, and there are a few, but very few and far between redeeming qualities about it. I am so stoked. I think you know this. For a long time, we've put off this next episode.
Mm-hmm.
Until I could watch it with Annika, because my wife, who is a fan of this stuff, has not seen X3, and I cannot remember anything about X3. And kind of full disclosure, just because it helps paint the picture here, you and I did those first 2 and 3 episodes pretty quickly, so we had those banked.
Yeah.
And so now we're back in real time with people, and we're going to be watching X3 next week, and I think of all these, this is the one I'm most excited to talk about, because I have heard some things, but I don't know anything. I'm genuinely curious to see how that franchise kind of wraps up with the old characters.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I'm trying to watch it with my wife. My dream is that Annika is on the episode with us. I don't know if we're gonna be able to swing it, but I think it'd be kind of fun to hear her perspective too. So
I do feel like I was hoping to do you a favor here once we figured out we had to watch Origins, by putting that before The Last Stand, because I feel like it might do The Last Stand some favors by contrast.
Okay, by proximity.
But yeah, we'll see.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. Thank you for subscribing and joining us on this journey. We love you all so much, and we'll see you right back here next time on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.